I have the pleasure to talk with Ricardo Alarcón de Quesada, a Kievan intellectual who also was a president of the Kievan parliament for more than 20 years. He also was a foreign affairs minister of Cuba. Alarcón, why the United States been increasing the blockade against Cuba?
Why? Well, exactly, I think that the U.S. is going through a very strange period. They have a president that pretend to restore American U.S. hegemony. This motto of let's make America first again is a recognition of the fact, of a very simple fact, that the U.S. is not anymore the only big superpower dominating the entire world. It's a kind of a dream of the most reactionary forces in the U.S. and Cuba, or the Cuban case, falls within that scheme. But this is not only Cuba. He's at this very moment, he's embarking in a large variety of confrontations and attacks around the globe and so on. He probably imagined that at this moment, the increase of pressure against Cuba and the Cuba's partners, foreign investors, people who want to travel to Cuba, to visit us, to exchange goods or anything, may help anticipating the very old dream of the American right, which is the demise of the Cuban Revolution. But that's what I can say. It's very difficult to give a rational interpretation of anything that comes from a very rational people like the ones now in the White House.
When we talk about the Halliburton Law and the Act 3, what you can tell us about it?
Well, the Halliburton was approved and it came into force in 1996. It's a very, I would say that it's mostly the biggest historical victory of the Batista-like people from Cuba. It's these people who left Cuba, who escaped from Cuba on January 1st, 1959, had been dreaming through generations to return to Cuba or to have the American government returning to them the old Cuba that they lost on that early morning of 59. And Halliburton is just that. On the one hand, it codifies, make into law, all the administrative measures that had been taken against Cuba since Eisenhower. Now, all of them, all those measures, are codified into law. That means that they cannot be eliminated or changed without an act of Congress. That means a decision by the House of Representatives and the Senate to change that. That's one thing. Then they try to extend throughout the globe all those measures and the new ones that Halliburton incorporated. The most important thing is that, apart from that, the law also guarantees, theoretically, at least in the level of legislation, guarantees that there won't be a solution or the confrontation between Cuba and the U.S. forever, that guarantee the eternity of the confrontation between our two countries. How? By stating in the law that there will not be normal relations between the two countries until and unless the revolutionary regime is ousted and a transition transitional period comes after that, and a so-called democratic regime is established. And all those steps, transition, democracy, and all that, is described in details in Title II of the Helms-Burton Act. But to begin with, the transition will be led by a U.S. official appointed by the U.S. president, a North American, not a Cuban. That will be the guy who will direct that period. And it is not an illusion. That person was designated by President Bush. George W. Bush designated Mr. Caleb McCary as the Cuban, the administrator of Cuba, of the Cuban transition. The problem is that, obviously, he couldn't perform an effective role. Why? Because to implement the diabolic plan that is described in detail on Title II of the Helms-Burton Act, they need to take over Cuba first and establish American intervention and all this with the interventor and all that. And they couldn't, of course. In addition to that, that is what I described so far, is the main substance of the law. In addition to that, Helms-Burton has also Title III and Title IV. Much has been said about Title III. Like, why? Because it affects others, not only Cubans, but others, and has been rightly so rejected by many countries around the globe. What is the idea? Well, to implement, to achieve the return of the old properties, or the lost properties, the old Cuba, and all that, they have to take control over Cuba. But in the meantime, they could also add certain steps that would increase the pressure against Cuba and anticipate the day they hope will come someday, the end of the Cuban Revolution. That is Title III. How? By allowing individuals who lost properties in Cuba, allegedly, to sue on American courts against those who are benefiting from those properties now. That's essentially what Title III established, by the way. By defining those who lost properties, it's very clear, it is stated clearly in the text of the Title III, that you are not talking only about Americans, individuals who were U.S. citizens at the time their properties were nationalized, but also individuals that were not Americans then, but are Americans now. That means the so-called Cuban Americans. That's a very, very, at this moment, it's very difficult to ascertain what is really going on that respect. There are only public informations since published in the media that refer to certain actions taken by certain individuals against those investing in Cuba. But the very first thing that I would say is that there are very, very, very few. Remember that in 1996, when they were considering that title and that law, the State Department argued that that may lead towards hundreds of thousands of legal disputes. And it has come down from hundreds of thousands to three or four. Why? Because some people are prefer to watch and see what's going on, and because it's a very irrational and very badly written, by the way, the text, the Helms-Burton Act, that may be open to different interpretations and very, very protracted legal discussions and so on, that then people have taken a rather cautious approach until that moment. Let's see what happened.
Very important issue, Venezuela. What is your opinion about the blockade now a U.S. government imposed to Venezuela, and also recently the decisions to attack Mexico too?
Okay. Yeah, so, and you should expect anybody to be attacked by this so-called president. Essentially, their attempt against the Venezuelan Bolivarian government has been a failure. They have used a lot of pressure. The most criminal and illegal steps, including stealing a lot of money and resources that Venezuela had legally in certain financial institutions, and attempt to coup d'etat, military pressure through the borders. It's a long list. But the fact is that the Venezuelan government, led by President Maduro, continues to be in control of the situation, and the majority of Venezuelans reject that violent approach or the idea of civil war and so on. Then now you have the new attack against Mexico, which is really crazy. It shows a very stupid approach to the problem. To impose tax products coming from Mexico to the U.S. as a way to reduce or control the migratory movement towards the United States is simply craziness. First of all, you have to take into account that those measures against Mexican economy would have unavoidably an effect on U.S. economy. A lot of things that they are referring to, those goods that would be overcharged by the U.S., belongs to American companies who move to Mexico to have their products there because of certain economic advantages that they have. Now they are losing those advantages because of the... In other words, at the end of the day, it will be the American consumer who will pay the bill. It will increase the prices. But apart from that, what that policy had to do with migration? The migratory phenomenon is a consequence of the social realities in the world. It has been going on for generations, and it will continue no matter the wars that you can elect or build or the sanctions that you may impose. As long as the social conditions of poverty and many, many problems that those people are affronting in Central America will continue to lead them towards the North to emigrate. And by imposing, by damaging the Mexican economy, you are not helping to reduce that phenomenon, but on the contrary, you're making it more difficult, the situation in Mexico, and accordingly also in Central America. It's a very, very stupid policy. You cannot base policy on rhetoric, Mr. Trump, that you cannot rule the world by tweeting in the early morning, by tweeting strange messages that shows that you are really not a very rational people.
Well, it was a pleasure really to talk with Ricardo Alarcón de Quesada. He's, like I was saying at the beginning of our conversation, is a Cuban intellectual who also was president of the Cuban parliament for more than 20 years, and he was too Minister of Foreign Affairs. Thank you very much, Alarcón, for this interview.
Okay, thank you. It was a pleasure.